Network.
You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Pooh.
Well, why don't you start us off?
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I want to do it tomorrow so I won't forget.
Okay. You be here tomorrow night and we'll do it again.
No, I want to do it today.
You want to do it today?
Uh-huh.
Well, go ahead.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag, of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
What made you think you would forget it?
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, folks, tonight we're going to continue with our revelations on the identity of the beast empire, that is. As we told you, we were not going to attempt to identify the man, but the empire. And that's exactly what we're going to do. You know, it galls me when I listen to shortwave and the other radio stations and hear all of these other people telling you that you heard it first there, that they warned you, and that they are the only ones that are revealing what's going on in this country. Because when I wrote about it in my book almost 5 years ago, and before that began to stand up and tell the world what was coming, every one of those people said that I was crazy. Every single one of them. Tom Valentine even called me a CIA agent and said that I could not be trusted. He signed his show off tonight with the admonition that you heard it all from Tom Valentine on Radio Free America first. Tom Valentine, you're a barefaced liar. Thank you. struggle, ladies and gentlemen, between English and French Freemasonry has produced such a convoluted body of entangled nations with so many conflicting interests that it can only be described as a beast. For example, four of the nations in French Freemasonry's European Common Market are also members of English Freemasonry's seven-nation trilateral commission. Those are England, France, Germany, and Italy. In looking at this convoluted mess, the prophet Daniel could hardly describe what he saw. He recorded in Daniel chapter 7, verse 7, that it was dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. The Apostle John appears to have had the same problem in his description, for his account of the seven heads as seven nations and ten crowns as ten kings leave the reader asking where the crowns are located on the body of the beast. John did not specifically mention on which of the seven heads, or eight, the ten horns were mounted, although we believe they are on the eighth head. And the debate continues among prophecy scholars even unto this day. The beast's body, according to Revelation chapter 13, verse 2, is made up of a leopard, the head, or teeth, some say, of a lion, and the feet of a bear. Interestingly, the national emblems of England and Russia are the lion and the bear, respectively. What nation the leopard represents is not quite yet clear. But one fact is certain. The ten European nations, or ten crowns, in Revelation chapter 17, verse 12, are not the body of the beast. You see, the ten crowns are separate, as described in John's vision. Likewise, Daniel chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, reveals the same ten plus one beast. Quote, "After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, and it had ten horns. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn." End quote. Bible commentators, English and Bauer, state that this little horn is the same as the beast, or the eighth world kingdom mentioned in Revelation chapter 17, verse 11. John said the beast comes out of the seven, which means the beast kingdom may come from both the historical seven empires and the end-time seven-nation trilateral commission. Daniel said the beast comes up from among the ten, which means it may come from one of the 12 common market nations. But by placing the three groups of nations side by side, we should be able to determine which kingdom or nation is the beast kingdom by focusing on the one listed in all three groups. In the historic seven, remember, there were Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and Nazi Germany. In the Trilateral Commission, there's the United States, Canada, England, Japan, France, Italy, or Rome, and Germany. In the Common Market, we have France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Luxembourg, England, Ireland, Denmark, Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, which again is Rome, and Germany. There are two nations in all three columns. And exactly as I predicted in my series on Mystery Babylon, they're Rome and Germany. Many Bible prophecy scholars believe the beast's headquarters will be based at Rome, especially those who view the Roman church as Mystery Babylon. And this, of course, would make the beast and the whore reign from the same city, which is unlikely. If, as Revelation chapter 17, verses 16 through 17 says, the beast permits the ten kings to burn the city of the whore. In the process, he would permit the burning of his own headquarters. And this isn't likely. You see, if the headquarters of the whore of Babylon is not Rome, but London, then Rome could be a candidate for the headquarters of the beast. A revived political Rome does not, however, have to be ruled from old Rome. Make sure that you understand this premise. Daniel says the beast, or little horn, which means new nation, or young nation, came up among the 10 European nations. Therefore, Rome, or any one of the other 9 nations, could have the same characteristics of ancient Rome, or the beast could be an 11th nation, as the little horn suggests. Therefore, the beast could be a young nation that was born or came up from among the 10 nations. And more accurately stated, ladies and gentlemen, the beast nation is a young nation whose population came from the territory of the 10 European nations. Some of you who have a good brain in your head already know who I'm talking about. To identify the little horn, which is revived Rome, we must consider the makeup of ancient Rome. For ancient Rome had 14 basic characteristics before its division by Constantine. 1, it was a democratic republic. 2, it had a divided balance of power. 3, it was based upon specific laws. 4, it protected the rights of Roman citizens. 5, it enforced an international law that all Roman citizens are equal. 6, it had a sordid history of slavery. 7, it operated under a capitalist system. 8, it authorized abortions. 9, it loved what we would call R-rated entertainment, and that's putting it mildly. 10, it offered state welfare programs funded by taxes. 11, it had a thriving business in lawsuits. 12, it was the melting pot of the world. 13, it promoted sports as its favorite pastime. And 14, it displayed as its national emblem the single-headed eagle with wings spread. After the division, the eagle became double-headed. Since the reign of Charlemagne as the first Holy Roman Emperor, German kings have been the most influential rulers in the Holy Roman Empire. As such, they became the new Caesars, or Kaisers, in Germany. As Reverend Church says, it seems that Germany plays a far more important role in the fulfillment of Bible prophecy than one might think at first glance. The thought that the future Antichrist could have his roots in Germany becomes more plausible when one considers the historical roots of the empire. Germany's historic roots, ladies and gentlemen, fit many of the requirements of revived Rome. Today, Germany is a democratic republic, has a divided balance of power, is based upon specific laws, protects the rights of its citizens, operates under a capitalist system, and has a sordid history of slavery under Nazism. For those in the labor camps were indeed slaves. Germany's most significant historic symbol and resemblance to ancient Rome is its national emblem, adopted from Constantine when Constantine came to power in 306 AD. He moved his headquarters from Rome to Constantinople in Asia Minor. His eastern empire became known as the Byzantine Empire, or the Second Rome. To symbolize the divided empire, Constantine transformed the Roman eagle from a single head to a double head, according to Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry. Upon the dissolution of that empire, the emperors of Germany, who claimed their empire to be the representative of ancient Rome, assumed the double-headed eagle as their symbol. Another reason, folks, that Germany could be revived Rome is found in Revelation chapter 13, verse 3. John says of the beast, quote, "And I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed," end quote. As we have seen, the seventh head was Nazi Germany. The dividing of Germany into East and West after World War II may indicate the wounding of the seventh head. The head healed may refer to the recent reunification of both Germanies in October 1990. Germany, however, must be disqualified. Sorry to disappoint those of you who were hoping that Germany was the one. But it must be disqualified as revived Rome for two important reasons. First, folks, Revelation chapter 13, verse 4, states that the beast will be a military power second to none. Second to none. At present, Germany is not that military power, but that could change rapidly. Second, as a member of the European Common Market, Germany is one of the ten horns, whereas Revelation 17, verse 12, describes the beast as being separate from the ten. Likewise, Daniel chapter 7, verse 8, describes the beast not as the ten horns, but as the little horn that came up from among the ten. As stated earlier, the little horn implies a young nation. Germany is millenniums old. And the phrase, came up from among the ten horns, indicates that this young nation will be populated from the territory of the ten nations of the old Roman Empire. And again, this cannot in any way, shape, or form mean Germany. For Germany is still primarily populated strictly and proudly by Germanic races. Now, I'd like to remind you all at this point that a portion, good portion of this broadcast comes from a book entitled Scarlet and the Beast, from my research, the research of the members of the Intelligence Service and the Citizens Agency for Joint Intelligence. And if you would like to purchase this book, Scarlet and the Beast, send us $39.95. That price is postpaid. Make checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. That's $39.95 per book. Make checks or money orders out to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. And send it to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. That's P.O. Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. Now I continue with tonight's subject. Russia could also be a candidate for the beast, for under the Tsars and the Soviets, Russia had a sordid history of slavery. Under the Soviets, Russia was a socialist republic. Socialism, if you'll remember from listening to this broadcast, is nothing more than democracy. And democracy is, of course, a code word for socialism. So the more you hear that word bandied about this country, the more you had better be prepared for socialism. Russia was a socialist republic with a large gulag slave population. And since December 1991, when the Soviet Union was dissolved, or at least we have been made to believe that it was dissolved, if you read Gorbachev's book entitled Perestroika, you'll see, in his own words, it's a sham. Russia became a democratic republic and therefore can be considered a young nation, a little horn. Moreover, Russia is attempting to operate under a capitalist system, as did old Rome. Russia's most significant resemblance to old Rome goes back to the fall of Constantinople, the second Rome, in 1453, when the Turks took that city. From that date, Russia has considered itself as the third Rome. In 1472, Ivan III was the first Russian emperor to call himself Tsar, which is Russian for Caesar. Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry reports how Russia adopted the double-headed eagle as its emblem. It was taken by Ivan III as his device on his marriage with Zoe Palaiologa, I believe, is the closest that I can get to it, also known as Sophia, daughter of Thomas of Morea, claimant to the imperial throne of Byzantium. Ivan III claimed to be the successor of the Eastern Roman emperors. Now, if we're to consider Russia as revived Rome, it must share all the characteristics of ancient Rome. But Russia, however, has a long history of failing miserably to protect the rights of her citizens. And she certainly is not the melting pot of the world. Furthermore, according to the description given in Revelation 13 and 17, the headquarters of the beast must be in a powerful nation with a strong economic, political, and military base, identical to that of ancient Rome. When the whore's city, London, is destroyed, the economy of the world can quickly be transferred to the headquarters of the beast kingdom, where it will be controlled by his mark, 666. And this cannot be Russia, for modern Russia is a nation whose economic stability for three-quarters of a century has depended upon financial infusions from the West. And if you've listened to this broadcast for very long, you know all about that. The most significant reason that Russia cannot be the beast kingdom is that she is not one of the seven historic or contemporary heads of the beast, as Revelation 17, chapter 11 demands. Nor was her nation populated by immigrants from the territory of the old Roman Empire, as Daniel chapter 7, verse 8 requires. Furthermore, Ezekiel 38 and 39 indicates that Russia will be destroyed before the beast kingdom can have military preeminence. So let's look at France. France today, under the leadership of 33rd degree Grand Orient Freemason Francis Mitterrand, is preparing for the coming of Antichrist to head the long-awaited French Masonic United States of Europe on December 31st. In 1992, that nation, or that organization, became reality. And in 1983, Mitterrand hired a Japanese architect named I.M. Pei to transform the courtyard of the old royal castle into a pyramid. The location of the pyramid is cynically symbolic of Masonry's triumph over both Christianity and the monarchical rule of France. Pi's pyramid, folks, is made of triangular glass window panes. The weekly Insight magazine of July 3, 1989, tells us this story, and I quote, "The number of window panes in Pi's pyramid, said to be 666, 666, and the form of the pyramid itself are reflections of the president's, that is, Mitterrand's passion for Masonic symbols, not to speak of his fondness for communing with the spirits of earth, that leads him every year, druid-like, to celebrate the spring equinox by pounding a wooden stick on a certain hill called Roche de Soltre in central France." France, ladies and gentlemen, however, cannot be revived Rome, because it does not have all 14 characteristics of ancient Rome. For example, France is not the melting pot of the world, nor does she display the eagle as her national emblem. In Revelation 17, the beast is initially controlled by the whore of Babylon, for she is riding on the back of the beast. And we've shown that the United Nations is currently controlled by English Freemasonry, the modern whore of Babylon. Moreover, both Freemasonries are allied politically in the United Nations, as they initially appear to be in the beast. But there's a problem of numbers. You see, it eliminates the United Nations at the present time as the kingdom of the beast. The lack of distinct divisions of 10 nations and 7 nations in the General Assembly or the Security Council of the United Nations would suggest it is not the beast. But if you read my book and you've looked at the world government model of regionalism as outlined in the appendix, you will see that the world will be divided into 10 regions. Furthermore, the United Nations has no real military strength of its own, as the beast must have. If the United Nations has any significance at all, it's by virtue of the nation on which soil it resides, and nothing more. Nothing more. The United Nations' strength as a world power exists only, and I've said this over and over again, it was a creation of the United States of America, and it exists only because of the military might of the United States of America, and the United States of America at the present time is furnishing its military forces as the police force of the United Nations. And not because of any of the United Nations' power. You see, the limits of United Nations power was effectively demonstrated in the recent war with Iraq. Old Babylon. Had it not been for the dominant presence of United States armed forces, the United Nations would not have had the military might to back up its demands that Iraq leave Kuwait, nor would it have had the military might to exert its force against any concept of sovereignty of nations under international law. To build a solid case for identifying the Beast Kingdom, we must consider more recent developments in Europe, which may cause the European Economic Community or Common Market to dissolve. You see, the four primary structural organs of the EEC include the Commission, the Council of Ministers, the Court of Justice, and the European Parliament. The European Parliament, folks, inaugurated the United States of Europe on December the 31st, 1992, exactly 7 years to the day from the year 2000. Significant. The figure 7 being a very important and prophetic number of years. You see, the United States of Europe, a phrase first coined in 1848 by French Freemasonry, is the much-touted precursor to French Freemasonry's world government, world socialism, and may itself be the 10 horns on the head of the revived Roman Empire instead of 10 of the 12 common market nations. This, of course, would exclude England and Ireland. The fulfillment of the prophecy in Revelation chapter 17, verses 12 through 13 and 16 indicates how this might happen. In this passage, we see that the 10 kings in the United States of Europe will hate the whore, London, and pledge their allegiance to the beast. When the beast gives the 10 kings permission to burn London, Ireland will go too. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, a comment that I made several weeks ago on this broadcast, that William Clinton, even though educated in the Rhodes Scholarship Program, even though he was brought to power by Mystery Babylon, he has turned against his master and has sided with the beast. Make you think? Does that make the wheels turn? I certainly hope so. Scripture gives us wisdom with which we can irrefutably identify the beast according to Scripture and his kingdom. Now this wisdom comes from understanding the mark of the beast in Revelation chapter 13, verses 16 through 18. And if any of you saw my 7-hour tape of the workshop that I did in Atlanta, Georgia, you already know what I'm going to talk about here. Quote, "And he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he had that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name." Here is wisdom. "Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And 6, and there are 2 ways to compute this. Roman numerals give the clue of how to identify the mark of the beast. When the New Testament was written, Rome used a combination of 6 alphabet letters to make up all their numbers, every one of them. The letters are DCLXVI. The letter M representing 1,000 is a more recent invention. Originally, it was CIC with the right-hand C turned backwards. And by connecting the 2 C's to the I in the middle, it gradually evolved into M. The 6 original Roman numerals and their numerical equivalent values are D equals 500, C equals 100, combine the 2, that is 600. L equals 50, X equals 10. You combine those two, it equals 60. V equals 5, I equals 1. Combine those two, it equals 6. And they total, in a column, DCLXVI, 666. When we group each of the letters above in order of twos, we discover the exact fulfillment of Revelation 13, verse 18, exactly as I have just outlined. Applying this scriptural wisdom, we can discover that the kingdom of the beast will be a revival of the old Roman Empire. And I demonstrated that in all of my lectures for the last several years. Whatever nation this kingdom is, the ultimate test for identification comes from understanding his mark or symbol, which is 666, and Scripture says it will be tied to the medium of exchange. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, that Adam Weishaupt established the Illuminati in 1776. Our forefathers, all members of this same secret organization, this fraternal organization, dollar bill from your wallet and look on the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States. You'll see a pyramid there with 13 courses of stone. On the bottom stone, you will see Roman numerals representing 1776. Now, among these secret societies is a group of men called the Order of the Trapezoid. The trapezoid merely represents a pyramid on top of a pyramid representing the New Age slogan or philosophy, as above, so below. Whatever is created automatically has its opposite created at the same moment. When our forefathers created this nation under God, and they never told us which God they created it under, they set up, according to their own philosophy, the procedure to seat the Antichrist upon the throne of the world, ladies and gentlemen. And if you take that 1776, MDC, CLX, XVI, and place them around the corners of three pyramids, beginning at the top of the first, at the apex, M, D at the lower left, C at the lower right of the first, then go to the second pyramid, C at the apex, L at the lower corner, X at the right lower corner, and then to the third pyramid at the top, X and the lower left, V and the lower right, I, and then draw an inverted pyramid beneath these three, and going across, adding exactly as we have placed 1776 in the same order that it appears on the lower course of the pyramid on the dollar bill, we now add across the lower legs and place the sum of each at the lower apex of the inverted pyramid underneath the three. DC is 600. LX is 60. VI is 6. 666. If we go across the top, ladies and gentlemen, we can see the year that the organization that began this great deception and this great enterprise, for they call it the enterprise, we can see the date that they were formed. Going across the very top apex of the three top pyramids, we have 1,000 plus 100 plus 10 is the year 1110. In 1110, the Priory de Sion was formed. They, in turn, created the Knights Templar, who in turn has been creating a mess. So that should give you more than enough cause to stay awake tonight. Go away. We've got a lot more to talk about, folks. In the first episode of the Star Trek series, the captain of the Enterprise was Christopher Pike, the greatest Freemason, by their own admission, that ever lived, was Christopher Albert Pike. He was relieved by James T. Kirk, KTJ backwards, is Knights of the Temple of Jerusalem. And these are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. The mission? To seek out new life forms and to go where no man has ever dared to go before. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is into a new future. Aboard the Enterprise. And that ain't written in no book. The Hour of the Time, folks, is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. They specialize in non-reportable, non-confiscatable hard assets, precious metals in its various forms. And if you get real worth from listening to The Hour of the Time, if this program literally lights up your mind and blows you away, then you owe some allegiance to them, for without them you would not be listening to this program. And your level of education would not be where it is at now. You would still be a bleeding sheeple somewhere in a pen being sheared, getting ready to be led into the slaughter. So call them and thank them and explore the ways that you can save something of what you have in the sure calamities that these deceivers are bringing about. In the near future, I can assure you, the revival of ancient Rome will be a certainty, and the death of what we have always known as the United States of America will be just as certain. Call now 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Don't wait to do it, folks. You know how you are. You'll be relieved once you have taken care of business. 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Haven't you ever noticed, folks, in the Star Trek series that Spock represents the illumined man, coming from a point of pure reason, warring against the emotions of Captain James T. Kirk? And of course, nothing can ever be repaired or fixed if Scotty is not there, because Scotty hoards the technology. He won't teach anybody anything, and he's the only one who can make that blasted thing go. And that's how they control the crew. who, if you really pay attention, are nothing more than a bunch of zombies who don't have money, don't have families, don't have love, never have fun, and do exactly what they're told to do all the time. Matthew chapter 24, verses 37 through 39 state, and I quote, "The world will be at ease, banquets and parties and weddings, just as it was in Noah's time before the sudden coming of the flood." People wouldn't believe what was going to happen until the flood actually arrived and took them all away. "So shall be my coming," or "so shall my coming be," end quote. Every ancient culture tells the story of a prehistoric civilization destroyed by flood. Apart from the biblical account of Noah's flood, the most renowned is the legend of the sinking of Atlantis, Ignatius Donnelly in Atlantis, the Antediluvian World, compares the biblical account with this Greek legend. My throat is getting dry, folks, and my tongue is becoming tied to my wisdom tooth, so you'll have to forgive me as I go along. The biblical deluge plainly refers to the destruction of Atlantis and agrees in many important particulars with the account given by Plato. The people destroyed were in both instances the ancient race that had created civilization. They had formerly been in a happy and sinless condition. They had become great and wicked. They were destroyed for their sins, and they were destroyed by water. And if you will remember, water means large numbers, masses of people. People. Democracy. Socialism destroyed Atlantis. That's a fact. Socialism. Democracy. Large numbers of people. Remember in The Lion King? The old king was killed by the stampede of the herd, the cattle, the people. Brought on by the machinations of Scar, the dark lion with the scar above his eye representing Cain. So you'd all better wake up. You've been taught baloney and bullshit all your life. And you put a little mayonnaise on it, and you eat it, and you go to town, and you think you're full of food. But you're not. You're spiritually desolate. You know nothing. I am a messenger, and you had better heed my message, for you have no time left. The earliest of secret societies were obsessed with the legend of Atlantis. It's always been their goal to get even for the destruction of their golden age. Who destroyed them? The church, the state, and the mob. It's represented in the initiation by the murder of Hiram Abiff. And they have sworn revenge. They will destroy all existing nation states, all existing religions, save theirs, secular humanism, wherein man will become God, and they will shackle, enslave the mob forever so that the mob can never harm them again. You get no helpings of baloney on the hour of the time. You get the truth, and it's force-fed, and you walk away full. And if you get down on your knees tonight and say a prayer, you will be spiritually awakened. William Still, in His book, The New World Order, informs us that, according to Masonic sources, the most important mystery of secret societies is an ancient plan passed down for thousands of years by oral tradition for the establishment of a world government, a universal democracy, a new Atlantis. It is called the Great Work. It is called the Plan. It is called the Enterprise. Old Atlantis was believed by Freemasonry to have been a democracy. Legend states that it was also an advanced scientific society. In fact, it is reputed to have been the center of learning and still explains, quote, secret societies believe that in Atlantis stood a great university where most of the arts and sciences originated. The structure that housed this university was an immense pyramid with many galleries and corridors, with an observatory for the study of the stars sitting on its immense apex. Mackey's Encyclopedia of Freemasonry says that from this legend developed a long-lasting tale of a continent in the Atlantic, somewhere west of the Straits of Gibraltar, once covered with civilization which sank suddenly under the waves. This legend sprang up from the inability of those who attempted to discover the meaning of this metaphor, their inability to understand the symbols. Explorers have searched for lost Atlantis in the Mediterranean, west and south of Africa, South America, and off the east coast of the United States. And in 1932, Edgar Cayce, who lived from 1877 to 1945, who claimed to be a psychic from Kentucky, reportedly pinpointed Atlantis. And to no one's surprise, Cayce said it was where Plato had located it, in the Atlantic Ocean, though Cayce did not specify exactly where in that great watery expanse, somewhere between the Mediterranean and the Gulf of Mexico. I guarantee you will find nothing there. Then he made another prediction that Atlantis would one day rise up out of the sea near the Caribbean island of Bimini. And if you sit around and wait for it, I guarantee you'll grow old and disappointed, and you will see nothing of the sort. Can we find any connection between the Atlantis of ancient legend and the location of the Beast Empire? Yes. And if you were listening to our series on Mystery Babylon, you've already found it because I gave it to you. It began with Francis Bacon, for he set up in the secret societies the efforts of the initiates to make the new Atlantis in the new world. And that's exactly why Atlanta, Georgia is named Atlanta. Wake up, dear sheeple. The Apostle John gives a description similar to Cayce's of the Beast Empire in Revelation 13, verse 1, quote, "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns." And if you had stood upon the continent of Europe or Africa and looked, ladies and gentlemen, toward the west, if you could have seen the continent of America, that is exactly the vision that you would have beheld. "And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns." The numbers 7 and 10 from this verse in Revelation correlate with the Atlantean legend. Still states that some 10,000 years before the Greek civilization, Atlantis was ruled in complete harmony by a cooperative commonwealth of 10 kings known as the Atlantic League. Seven of these kings ruled over the seven islands that actually made up what was called the continent of Atlantis. The other three kings of the Atlantean kingdom ruled over the other three known continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa. Notice he gives away what he is trying to avoid there. The other three kings of the Atlantean kingdom ruled over the other three known continents, Europe, Asia, and Africa. For he knows what I know. That America is the beast. The legend states that these 10 kings were brothers, which may mean they belonged to a brotherhood similar to Freemasonry. Freemasonry believes the number 10 is significant when applied to government. Manly P. Hall, a 33rd degree Freemason, explains, and I quote, "The League of 10 Kings is the cooperative commonwealth of mankind. the natural and proper form of human government. Atlantis, therefore, is the archetype or the pattern of government which existed in ancient days but was destroyed. End quote. Like the biblical story, the legend of Atlantis states that its destruction was due in large part to its passion for limitless luxury. No longer did the Atlanteans value goodness above material wealth. Does that sound familiar? Plato says, quote, the portion of divinity within them was now becoming faint and weak through being oft-times blended with a large measure of mortality, end quote. Loving their possessions above all else, the Atlanteans had lost their virtue. And now the seven kings of the seven isles of Atlantis amassed a great army to conquer the three continents because of their greed for power. The father of the gods, Zeus, caused the seven islands, or seven heads of Atlantis, with its population, to sink beneath the waves. They were literally destroyed by the weight of the welfare state. Freemason Hall states that when Atlantis died, so did the ideal pattern of government, which they're trying to bring back. And every effort to bring it back has always met with failure. Socialism sucks, and so do socialists. According to Hall, the League of Ten Kings is part of the secret doctrine, preserved by secret societies through their oral traditions. Hall believes that when the unifying force of the Ten Kings was broken, destruction automatically followed. So complete was this destruction, he writes, that men forgot there is a better way of life and accepted the evils of war and crime and poverty as inevitable. The old Atlantis is gone, dissolved in a sea of human doubts, but the philosophical empire would come again as a democracy of wise men. I'm sure you've noticed how wise they are. They steal, they loot, they rob, they war, they lie, they deceive, they cash bad checks by the thousands. Freemasonry planned long ago to philosophically raise Atlantis out of the sea. Remember, the sea is the masses of people. And in this new land, reestablish democracy as a new world order. And it's written right on the dollar bill of the United States of America, Ordo Novus Ordo Cyclorum. Novus Ordo Cyclorum. And Cyclorum is intentionally misspelled so that the total number of letters will equal 13, which is the representation of death and resurrection for the old. Golden Age will be resurrected. And if you noticed in The Lion King, it will be resurrected in the body of racism. For at the end of the movie, you saw all the animals standing only with their own kind, none of them mixed. And the hyenas, representing the black and Hispanic race, had disappeared and were nowhere in sight. Those who rule now call them the useless eaters of the world, and they fully intend to destroy them down to the last man, woman, and child. So much for their benevolent despotism, as they call it. For it's the same old story. A few brilliant men misleading a bunch of ignorant, stupid followers, causing them to believe in these myths to bring about the cause whereby the brilliant few shall rule all. The old dream of the pearl of great price being held in the hand of a man is coming to fruition. And all of you, I don't care what you believe, what church you attend, what race you are, what you think you know, you have been lied to, you have been deceived, you know nothing. Your entire life has been a fantasy. You are living in a vacuum. Your happiness is nothing but self-deception. It's all going to be yanked out from under you. Doesn't matter which side you're on. Doesn't matter what you believe. Don't matter if you're helping or hindering this, fighting it or helping it to bring itself into reality. You are deluded, and unless you come out of your delusion, you will suffer. Truth is the only answer. Seek ye the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Truth is the only answer. Truth is the only religion. Truth is the only way. The path is straight, and the gate is narrow, and only those who seek the truth shall find the path and shall pass through the gate. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. And in your sleep tonight, I hope that I have brought about a means whereby in your dreams, to the darkest courses of your mind, this information can bring about an awakening. If there must be a new world, let us bring it about, and let us make it a world based upon a foundation of truth, love, and understanding. Let us turn away from the liars, the deceivers, and the manipulators. Seek ye the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And in this message tonight, can be, if you want it to be, the cocoon of a completely different world than those who would enslave us, would bring into being.